You're listening to Cosmic Tonic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me say that again.
Cosmic Tonic.
Hi, thanks for tuning in to Cosmic Tonic. Today, we interview Jenaba about the successful Astro Kickstarter project, Mercury's Brood. If you like what we do, please leave us a 5-star rating, write a review, or share the podcast with your friends. We appreciate it. And there's a couple different ways you can listen to us. One way is on your favorite podcast app, or by subscribing to us on YouTube, where you can listen while enjoying a fun and dreamy VHS montage. Thanks for being here, and we hope you enjoy the show.
Okay, so we are here with Jenaba, who is the founding mind behind the Mercury's Brood anthology, which is currently in the midst of a really successful and inspiring Kickstarter campaign. So first of all, congratulations on your success with that, Jenny. Before we launch into some of the nuts and bolts of your vision for that anthology, maybe we could start by you telling us a little bit more about yourself. Who are you?
Great question. who am I? My name is Jenaba. I am a second generation astrologer who's only recently taken up that mantle, or whatever we call that. I don't know. And I mean, astrologically, I'd say that being a 10th house sun and a 12th house moon tells you almost everything you need to know about me. That conflict. But yeah, I'm a writer, and I am just really excited about the Mercury's Brood anthology project, because I get to work with so many other writers and learn from them in terms of craft and in terms of the subject itself. So yeah, I'm just really excited.
I want to obviously ask about the Mercury's Brood anthology, but I'm now really curious about you being a second generation astrologer, because that's super rare, I feel, at least in my experience. Was one of your parents, or is one of your parents an astrologer? Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah. So my mother was a practicing astrologer. Now she's just a casual astrologer. And I only came to astrology fairly recently, because if our relationship was different, if not for the 12th house moon, I think I might have come to it when I was a child. I think I would have taken her seriously when she told me that she knew things, but I did not. So now, looking through like her old sketchbooks from undergrad and like the 80s, and seeing her like hand-drawn charts for peers, it's just a really enlightening experience. So like we're able to bond in that way, like through the craft, if not interpersonally, which is its own particular kind of, I don't want to say joy, but it's special. Yeah.
So how old were you when you started getting into astrology? It seems like it was just a part of your life since you were a very young child, but when did you start really studying it professionally?
I would say only 2 years ago. And tarot was my gateway for sure. I remember I was going to therapy that spring, and I had, I lived in the Bronx, and I was going to therapy in Washington Heights, and there was this bus that I had to take. And I knew that there was this, Botanica, on Fordham Road that I really wanted to check out for a long, long time. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to buy my tarot deck from there one day. So one day, coming home from therapy, I'm just like, today's the day, hop off the bus early, go to the Botanica, find my tarot deck, find some crystals, and I start working with it. And when I come across the correspondences between the decans and the major and minor arcana to signs and planets and all that, that was the gateway that brought me to astrology more wholeheartedly, instead of from a casual observational standpoint. And yeah, never looked back.
Cool. I love that tarot was one of your gateways, one of your thresholds into astrology. I feel like my relationship with tarot is the other way around, where I started with astrology and then became so captivated by the imagery and the different but parallel archetypes in the tarot deck. So I appreciate that they do seem like twin impulses in a way. And especially for people who, you know, are artists or who are writers, I think that there's such archetypal, like, gold that's actually quite, you know, multivalent and not limited by the images or by the major arcana or the minors, but they hold a lot. They're powerful. So I think this might be a good opportunity to maybe tell us and tell the audience a little more about how Mercury's Brood came about. So how the idea struck you? Is this something you'd wanted to do for a long time, or was it more of a flash idea that came to you? And also what your vision is for the anthology. So that's a bit of a two-pronged question.
Yeah. The thing is, whenever I go to panels or I'm watching panels and I see someone on stage get asked like a package of like two questions or like three questions, I'm always like, how do they remember? Because I already forgot. but let's see. It really was a flash, but also I was at that time I was in the midst of trying to figure out how I was going to intentionally engage with the community that I was thrust into. It was the community that I willingly walked into. But as far as most people in communities don't have a lot of attention on them, like that's what it means to be part of a community. Like it's more lateral, right? And so having wrote an essay that went viral about this particular topic of racism and bias in practicing astrology. I just knew that I didn't want to be pigeonholed as a person who is only ever talking about this one particular thing, even though I knew I would continue to talk about it. I just wanted to think about what else, what fuller picture, what fuller idea of myself do I have to share with this space? And in a flash of lightning or whatever, I thought to create a zine, just because I know that I'm surrounded by a lot of really brilliant minds, like just on Twitter alone, not even counting like the larger astro community that doesn't exist on Twitter. And I was just thinking, like, there's so much genius being spread every day, and Twitter's such an ephemeral space. You either catch it while it happens or you capture a retweet later at the right time. But after that, it's gone. And so I'm really sentimental, and I like the idea of time capsules. I like the idea of things that you can hold and refer to. So the idea of doing a zine is what came to mind. And then eventually, as submissions came in and the scope of the project just felt like it was growing, I was like, you know what, this is a book. Fuck it. Let's just make a book. So that's how that happened. And yeah, I forgot the second question.
What's your vision for the anthology?
I just want people, astrologers, to see themselves in a work. And I mean, like, literally, like, I want people, my peers, to know the joy of seeing their name in print, because I think it's fully and wholeheartedly deserved. And I just want Twitter is super accessible, but like I said, it is ephemeral, and I just want everyone's words to reach wider audiences and with longevity and stability. Yeah. And I just want to highlight, I want to highlight new voices, emerging voices. So not just young people, but people who are young to astrology, right? And people whose voices are often tokenized. So like a Black person or an Indigenous person or a trans person who may find that their identity like excludes them in certain rooms where maybe they're the only one, and that's by design. I just want the book to be a place where you get you get everything. And it doesn't feel like cherry picked. It doesn't feel like these identities are being spotlighted in an uncomfortable way. I want it to feel natural and good.
Mm, I love that. And I am really attaching to this concept of lateral. You mentioned it just now, and then you talk about it on the Kickstarter. Because I'm a psychotherapist, and I came to psychotherapy doing peer counseling, where there was like this major accessibility that it didn't matter your socioeconomic background, your class, your race, nothing. It was really like making it available that everybody deserved to have that available. And there was just something that really resonated with me with this concept of lateral learning versus like the top down. And I know personally in my astrology journey and the apprenticeship I did, it really felt, you know, there was this top down, but it was the peers that really, I don't know, just amplified and nurtured my experience. So I was wondering if you could talk about that part of the vision a little bit more and what that opens to everyone.
Yeah, for sure. I think everything comes back to the Astro Twitter community, because that's where, that's my entry point. But I think that space is really special because you have emerging minds mingling every day with established voices, right? And like you talk to most astrologers on Twitter, and we all have that moment where Chris Brennan followed us back, right? We're just like, oh my God, Chris Brennan followed us. And it's like super novel and super intense. And you're just like, how did I make it in my first week on what just happened? And then you get used to it. And you remember that everyone is here to share, right? And that's just not the case in a lot of spaces. And it's not the case when you leave the online sphere, right? And so I just wanted to take that energy and put it into a more traditional setting, like a published work, where you can still get that mingling and that that mix of experience and that mix of perspective from top down in a way that, again, feels lateral and feels like there is a really intentional sharing of information. I just think it'll be beneficial to whoever reads it, because there's always something new to learn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that moment with Chris Brennan. And I guess personally, I've experienced that too with him, because here in Colorado before COVID, he would run a monthly astrology group at the Mercury Cafe too, here in Denver, Colorado. Yeah. And it felt like a true mingling, like there was a leveling out, like you could totally just walk up to Chris and Lisa and they were so welcoming. And then just the diversity in the group. And so I love that that was an initial extension to you and that you could feel that.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I love that.
Oh yeah. I miss it so much. Okay. You have inspired me to reach out to them this week and see what can we do to reignite it. Yeah. Cause I miss it. It was, in all different levels, you know, and any question, welcome.
Mm-hmm. It's affirming, when your mentors, invite you into a space. And so now I'm the one doing the inviting, saying you, all of you come here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it pays itself forward, right? When you receive that invitation, that welcoming, that inclusivity, you know, sitting down at the table with Chris and all the folks from the from whatever lecture was being held, and we're just all sitting down, sharing a drink and a meal. And I love that you're doing that as well.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
Something that I'm hearing too in this is this theme of going between. It's like you're taking the ephemerality of Twitter and you're importing it into the long lasting or the endurance or the resilience or the tradition of book publishing. So you're kind of importing that ephemerality into the more traditional, solid realm. Mm-hmm. And that feels so incredibly mercurial. I mean, the ephemerality of Twitter, of course, feels mercurial, but then also just
you know, Mercury/Hermes is the only deity in the Greek pantheon that traverses all the realms, from the realm of the gods to the underworld. And I feel like you're doing some of that carrying and some of that transferring. And I've been thinking to myself, or contemplating, frankly, as a magical practitioner, that I feel, I don't know if this was intentional on your part, so I'm really curious to hear, but I feel by choosing the title you did, you've like talismanically imbued this project with Mercury. And it doesn't feel like a coincidence that you were highlighted, that Mercury's Brood was highlighted as a campaign for Kickstarter on the day where Mercury was nestling up against Venus and Jupiter. So I'm curious to hear more about your choice of the title. Like, was that intentional? Where did that title come from? And what is your relationship with Mercury?
So Mercury's Brood, I knew that the title would involve Mercury, point blank, period. It had to. I am Mercury. That's how I feel. I just feel like because when you look at my chart, you see my ascendant ruler is in Virgo. And then you see that Mercury and Venus are like exactly conjunct, off by 2 minutes. And they're in the terms of Mercury. You look at my sun in the terms of Mercury, you look at Jupiter in the terms of Mercury, you look at my Saturn in the terms of Mercury, you look at my moon in the terms of Mercury. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. And yet it does. I live it. It's funny that the only traditional planet of mine that's not in the terms of Mercury is my actual ascendant ruler, Mars, which is like, I guess that's another story, but I just like the idea of bringing all these minds together in a mercurial fashion and thinking of us all as children of Mercury, who are creating something in honor of. And so I was playing around with synonyms for children, spawn. And when I came to Brood, I was like, why does this feel so right? Why does it sound so familiar? What is happening here? And then I was like, oh yeah, Octavia Butler, Lilith Brood, you know? And it's funny because my mother, she tried to get me into astrology when I was young, and it made it less interesting for me because it was her thing. When she tried to tell me about houses, I was like, you're making that up. And so the same goes with Octavia Butler. She is my mother's favorite author. Who's another author I came to later. And so it just felt really right to pay homage to my learning lineage in this way. Yeah, those are the largest factors on my mind at the time. And yeah, it didn't escape me either when we made it to the front page and Mercury was, I can't even handle it. I actually cried. I'm not even a crier, and I cried when I saw it on the front page of Kickstarter.com. And I found it by accident too, because I closed a tab by accident and was trying to get back to my profile, which I never close. And I had to open the homepage, and there it was. And I lost my mind. But yeah, Mercury showed up.
Did you check the chart of that moment?
I couldn't see straight.
Fair enough.
I saved it though. I saved the time, but I didn't look at the chart yet.
Oh, wow. Such restraint. I know what you mean about not being, I always like to think that I will have some wherewithal to look at Astrogold or what have you when something major happens. I never do, but I'd be curious.
Phone calls.
Fair enough.
I was just like, go to Kickstarter.com. Go to Kickstarter.com.
Phil Mercury. I love it. Reaching out.
Yeah. And it was really cool to hear people's responses on the phone when they check. I didn't call like a bunch of people, but enough to get a little sample going. It was nice.
Has your support grown since that day even more?
No. I got a lot of, I'd say personal support. Yeah. Personal support, but not in terms of capital, right?
I made
a few very erratic, very chaotic tweets about making it to the homepage. And I think one of those got like, it was either a tweet or a Instagram post, or maybe they both got 300 likes. I don't know, but that's not really like something that happens for me. It's like, this is a lot. And a lot of people were saying, yes, it is. I just checked too. Congratulations, blah, blah. But it didn't translate to revenue, which is fine because that was actually a day I told myself I was going to give myself a break. Because I know that this is a project that has a finite amount of time to exist in this capacity of like active funding, but also we're already funded and I can't think about this every second of the day.
Sure.
I can't do that. So I have to like yell at myself to just like give yourself today to not care, because you already did so much. And even if you don't make another dollar for this campaign, you've already won. So I just make sure to give myself some grace and some time to just like chill.
Yeah. I was curious about that too, in reading your most recent blog, making a call to the Asher community about supporting this project and how it's been received. And if you were, in fact, feeling more supported from writing that blog. And when I look at this project, it just seems like a call to action as well. So mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit more. And if you truly feel supported, I mean, it seems like you are, and you are getting some the support you need and want, but do you feel like there's more that you would like to see for this project as far as the community?
Absolutely. I feel support from the community itself. And when I say the community itself, I mean like networks that come together mm-hmm. in interest of learning and love, right? As opposed to networks on their own, just like groups of people. And so I feel absolutely supported in that way. And there's a reason why we were able to get fully funded in 9 days. It's because people showed up, regular people showed up, went into their savings, their checking accounts and said, I want to support this project. But it's also not lost on me that those are the only demographics, save for like three institutions that showed up. And by institutions, I mean, one school, Portland School of Astrology, AYA, and one other institution that I can't name because they haven't put their own name out there. But I noticed. The thing is that it takes 600 people to do what maybe five institutions could do.
Totally.
Right? And that's just not lost on me. It's not lost on me that regular people like myself, when I say regular, I just mean like me, can dip into their paycheck, take out $20 or $60 or $100 because they believe in something so bad and they want to see that as part of the astro future that they're engaging with. But there are these huge institutions with unimaginable amounts of capital that just have the capacity to do so much more and don't. Like, I just don't understand why you wouldn't invest in the future in this particular way. I think it's really exciting. And also it's really loud. It's a loud project. It's not, it's kind of everywhere. So it's not for lack of reach. I know these people see it. So I'm just curious why they're not investing yet, because I know that institutions exist to invest in the future, you know? So what else are you doing? Not that I feel entitled, but I have questions, you know?
Do you think you know why?
That's a funny question.
You don't have to answer that. But I'm just wondering.
Yeah. So I haven't, I tried. So, okay. Scorpio rising. I'm like naturally like super suspicious.
That's why I'm asking you.
No, but I do have to, and again, it comes back to like community versus institutional support. Like these are demographics that just have vastly different interests, right? And so, yeah, when I wrote my first essay back in October on the idea of trauma theater in in astrology and presentations, sure, that was received well by my community. But as far as people with power, I can't say the same. And so I don't know, Scorpio rising talking, I don't have a way of knowing what bridges that some people and institutions may have perceived me to have burned. I don't know what those are and if that's actually occurred. Or if it's just more of a general disinterest in the work itself. I have no way of knowing until someone responds to me.
Sure.
But yeah, I am curious. And I'm curious to see where that letter will go. I did make sure to BCC'd as many board members and presidents as I can find from all of those orgs that I listed at the bottom of the letter. And I didn't realize that yesterday was a holiday. So I wouldn't have sent it out on a Sunday night if I knew Monday was a holiday. But we'll see what happens today. Today's Tuesday. People are checking their emails, one would hope.
I feel like too with the retrograde, we've gone, you know, there was this cushy moment that you experienced firsthand when Mercury was making out with Venus and Jupiter. But now it's retrograding towards Saturn. And I do feel like I personally anyway, and I also have a fixed sign rising, like I'm feeling more bumps. I'm feeling more delays as well. So I have hopes that if not this week, then maybe hopefully when things start to turn around a little bit by next week. But I do think too, that what you're speaking to, there can be such an inertia in certain organizations. And it's like you have so many, and we see this on all levels, right? Like in, you know, governmental organizations, and of course these relatively small scale organizations in the astro community. It's like if you have many people working on something, then you can all disown responsibility. And that's not an excuse, but it's something I've observed. And I do think that the observation you're making is a really vital one, that 600 people can come together, or I don't know what the current number is now, but that's a lot of people who are like pulling money out of their personal resources and handing it to this project. And it doesn't feel acceptable, really, that as soon as you're in an organization with others, you can just kind of stand back and let someone else deal with it. And then no one actually deals with it, or no one makes a move. No one takes that agency. So I feel like in my reading of your letter and also in some of the tweets I've seen, I do see, it sounds like you are coming from a place of care. And like you use the phrase, you know, we're inviting you to come along with us. This has an engine of its own. I'm almost getting the picture that like, you don't, obviously that income would be super, super valuable. And like, you could do so much more with more capital, but also you don't need them. Like you already have such a groundswell of support. It's just a little, I can understand that it might be a little frustrating that the people or the organizations that may have more resources aren't all stepping up or kind of tuning out in some way.
I just want people to use their capital and resources effectively. If your interest in diversity starts and stops with like 10 scholarships to people who you're going to ask to like pimp out their trauma for the chance to win it in the first place. For people who you're not going to fully support once they win, who you're still going to make feel like the only person of their ilk in the room. So this is coming out, I guess, when I have a feature coming out via Kickstarter and Skillshare, which is really cool. They interviewed me last week. That was really exciting, albeit nerve-wracking. And I was looking over the quotes that I had given, and I basically said something about like being exhausted at the notion of exclusivity under the guise of inclusivity, because you have to really show up for people if you're going to let them through in the door. Like, this is what I, this comes back to what I wrote in the first letter when I was talking about the ways in which that fiasco could have been avoided if if you put more marginalized people in positions of power, if you're actually willing to share your mic, if you're actually willing to share your power, these kinds of things do not happen. But when you're inviting marginalized people to only exist in support roles, to only give spare pieces of advice, and you don't actually value what they have to say, you don't actually give them the power to execute and act on, what are you even doing? What is the point? It's just all, it's all optics. It's all useless to me. So so when I say, like, what are you actually doing with your money? That's what I'm asking. Like, how are you redistributing resources with intentions to empower and not just I don't have a metaphor for what they're doing, but I don't like it.
Well, it's like, it is optics. Like, I think you nailed it with that word. It's unpopular to appear as though you're not inclusive. And then it's like, there's a certain quota that they feel that they tick off by including a certain number of people.
Yeah, it's just depressing. Yeah, just looking at various boards and seeing one brown face in a sea of like 12 is just sobering. It's something.
Yeah.
But yeah, optics. Like, they're not even good optics. they're not even attractive optics. And I'm just tired of watching people phone it in. But again, I still approach with love, because like you said, it's an invitation and not a demand. I'm saying, if you are interested and invested in your relationship to community in a real way where you can usher in something different than what you know, and still be a part of the change, that's an act of graciousness, I think. Because I don't have to invite anybody. If you're not listening, I don't have to include you. But I'm saying, I noticed that you haven't been listening, and here's your final call.
But speaking of acts of graciousness, I really feel like you're paving the way for other projects like Mercury's Brood to come behind and really follow in your wake, you know? And that's super commendable, in my opinion, because what you're doing is, it's hard, right?
I don't know who told me I could do this.
And honestly, after this, you know, it might not be as hard for others. And so Right. You're the first of its kind. And so what you're experiencing is all these new ways of approaching, trying to figure things out. I mean, like you said, like, you're shaking things up, and in my opinion, what you're doing is just super honorable.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm terrified. Actually, some days I wake up, I'm like, who said, yeah, Jenna, but that's a great idea, go ahead and do it. because the closer we get to closing the campaign out, the more I realized how audacious and how huge of a swing this was.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, what? like, I knew this enough to be scared. And I kept asking people, I kept asking friends and like my advisors too, like, am I delusional? Because I'm actually terrified. Like, what if, like, I don't want to fail in public. Chiron on the midheaven is like my worst. And And people are saying, no, you're not delusional. The fact that you're scared at all means that like you are perfectly healthy. Like everything is okay. And we're going to get this done. And so I believe them. Now that we're actually closing, it's hitting me even harder just how huge of a personal risk and just swing this was. And I'm really proud of myself. I'm proud of everyone who was involved, who stepped up to boost, who contributed in any capacity. And I think it's really dope that this means that more projects like it can arise in the future. I saw a tweet last night. Brilliant person. Their name is Mo. Their handle is Austral_tour. And they said, can we crowdfund a small pamphlet on the real significations of the houses? Because they feel like pop modern astrologers and traditional astrologers alike get them kind of messed up and wrong. And they're like, we need to come together and make like a definitive pamphlet that lays this out. And when they said crowdsource, not crowdfund. But when they said crowdsource, I wasn't sure if they meant like in terms of just the work itself or in terms of resources as well. But the idea that it could be either one, and that be a task that was not or doesn't have to be unimaginable at this point, because Mercury's Brood has already done it, is really cool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think I just would love to see more indie publications in astrology, because I just love indie pubs of all types, no matter the scope, I'll say, or tradition of learning. And we're all just crying. A lot of us have like full-time jobs or part-time jobs outside of astrology. This isn't like the only thing in our lives. So like it makes sense to do or come together on any work. For me, this is going to be a full-time thing just because I want to get this out by summer, Virgo season really, which is why I really would like to super fund it, overfund it, so that I don't want to cry on my way there, essentially. But yeah, I like that it's opening up doors for similar projects, and I hope to read them and support them in any way. I want to offer resources on how to effectively crowdfund similar projects. I also know that I was in like a particularly like auspicious position but you can teach someone how to build networks. You know, it doesn't have to be like you either have it or you don't. Like, networks are people, and you can build with people. But yeah, so I'm playing around with the idea of how to disseminate that information. It could just be a thread. I might do like a YouTube video. I don't know. I don't want it to be corny. So, but I just want to share. So we'll see.
Well, that alone, it would also be really valuable information for people, I think, for people who are kind of devising ideas, but don't know how to materialize them yet or realize them yet. So I'm wondering, I know that from your blog, you posted a call for submissions back in November, but possibly your scope has shifted knowing this extra support that's coming in, or maybe not, I don't know. So I'm curious if this is someone's first time about hearing about Mercury's Brood, obviously they should back the project. We still have time, but aside from that, are there any windows to still submit, or are there any windows to get involved, or might there be a sequel someday, or what would be your message to people who are just learning about this project?
My email is always open. So at this point, I close general submissions just to like assess what I have without like being overrun and overwhelmed. And at this stage, I am reaching out to people. I'm procrastinating reaching out to people for commissions of people whose work intimidate me, but whose work I would really like to see in the book. So hopefully I'm going to start doing that on Thursday, and I'm so nervous about it. Actually, I don't want to hear no or no, I hate you. Bye.
I don't think you're going to hear that.
I'm glad I've waited, just because now that we are funded, it's not just like this little indie project that may or may not have a chance, that people who like have a lot on their plate already are taking a chance on. At least like now when I reach out, they'll know that this is a demonstrably proven to be sturdy project. So that's cool. I have that going for me in my favor, but I'm still nervous. I still have nerves about reaching out to some folks. But I'm still open to submissions. I'm just not doing a formal call for them anymore. So if anyone has any work or any ideas that they would like to share, mercuriesbrood@gmail.com is where to go. I would actually really love more visual art. That would make me really happy. I think we can use some more to break up the text and just give us a little more vibrance. Yeah, and then I might put out a formal call for editors. However, I have a sample piece that I might put out for people to edit and just get a sense of, because not everyone has a portfolio, right? But they're good at doing the thing. So I'll just put out a sample piece probably in March, and that will likely be on my blog, girlimtrying.com.
Jasmine or Kestrel, do you have any last questions for Jennifer?
I don't.
Well,
thank you so much though. This has just been great.
I was a bundle of nerves. I am a bundle of nerves. But this has been really nice.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm excited. Sorry, go ahead, Kestrel.
No, I'm excited too. I feel like you channel the excitement. I just really wanted to give you a compliment and just say that I'm really inspired, this revisioning or reimagining of community. And I'd really love to just invite the audience to obviously look at the Kickstarter, and we can make a few more plugs about that. But you can link to your essay, this trauma theater essay. And I just wanted to highlight, I think you ask several, I think it's four or five really profound questions that I think it's worth all of us to sit with and contemplate, starting with like, who is your quote we, and what does community mean to you? And then you get into, you know, how do we really show up for those in crisis? And I also want to extend to you, you know, how can we continue to show up for you and, you know, be kind of that air beneath your wings that you aren't having to go it alone. I know you're spearheading this idea, but just that you have our support in your back pocket as well. And thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. This was so exciting. This is really exciting.
Oh, good.
You all were one of my, you and Chris Brennan were one of my first Astro follows. I think I just remember seeing your name really early on Twitter. So that's really cool. Cosmic Tonic.
Way to go, Eliza. I don't do Astro Twitter. I'm like, I'm the opposite. Maybe I'm so emotional and sensitive with that Pisces moon that I don't even have an account. Like I sometimes, oh my gosh, but I am still a presence to be. I'm not ignoring things. Oh, you're brave. I'd be a puddle.
No, I get it. I get it. It's rough waters out there. I'll say that. But it has its joys.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Jennifer. And I really hope that everyone checks out your Kickstarter campaign. So if they go to, that's on your blog, right? That's like fairly easy to find. What's the easiest way for them to find it?
If you go to my blog, girlimtrying.com, up at the header, you'll see Mercury's Brood Kickstarter. You just click on that, takes you right there. And we're running until February 25th. I think that's a Thursday. And so I believe we're around 47K funded currently. I would love to hit 200% funded and get us to 60 by end. That would be really awesome. So yeah, February 25th is when we close.
Well, great. And we'll link that in the notes as well, so people can just click below too.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we'd like to thank everyone for being here, and we'll see you next time. Bye. We'll be right back.